Hello and welcome to Only Foreign Films. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Patrick. And welcome to a very special 26th episode with no guest.
Woo! There's no one else here.
It's just us. No, we've hit 25 episodes and we are both making film threes this semester. Mm-hmm. So we're very busy and our schedules are no good. So we thought this episode would be the first of probably a couple, at least this semester, that would be just the two of us. And we did the one for the best of the decade, or our favorites of the decade, towards the beginning of the year, and really like that, and that's had good response. So this feels perfect because they're way easier to do schedule wise time wise than one with a guest. So here we are.
Here we are. I'm very excited for all the stuff that we have planned today.
So today, I believe we're talking about some underrated films that we both love, that just to give them a little special shout out. But we'll still do our normal, what have you seen lately? I don't have hardly anything. I've been on set. I sound a little sick and a little tired because I am a little sick and a lot tired. I've been on a set all weekend blowing stuff up. I'm sure if follow me on social media or anyone connected
drop
to
your
this
at.
Pod at Honkwave, which I don't like dropping because it sounds stupid.
Oh, why?
I don't know. I made it when I was younger just because I knew it would be free on every platform. But no, I was on a part with a bunch of other people who have actually been guests on this show of a very cool short film, World War One short film. So check out A Proper Soldier when it comes out probably the end of this year. But until then, what have you seen lately, Amanda?
I actually have a couple things I can talk about. I watched this film. So I have gotten into the habit of just like adding stuff to my catalog, like on Hulu or Netflix or whatever. And then on Hulu specifically has the expiring tab. So it'll make me watch it. Like if it'll make me look at it again and be like, do I really want to watch this before it leaves?
Yeah, I like that pressure.
Yeah, yeah, it really makes me watch stuff. And so I've like been sitting down to actually watch more films that are not just for this podcast or like for class. And so I saw that this film that I've seen stills from a lot because I feel like it's a very unique look to it. It's called Everything Beautiful is Far Away. Have you heard of it?
I've not, no.
It's and I say unique look because it's set in the desert, and it kind of uses like the same type of color scheme like Mad Max kind of does, like with the blue and orange, but it's not like the super saturated blue and orange. It's really natural and very beautiful landscape. And I believe, if I did my research correct, they did shoot some of it on location. And I mean, you can kind of tell that some of it's not necessarily on location, but it's not to the detriment of it. But I've known it from the stills and from the cinematography, specifically of the, because it's only, there's only three main characters, or there's only one main character, then two, I guess, secondary characters, and then really nobody else. And it follows this one guy who is just trekking along in the desert because he doesn't want to be in the city anymore. And he had built this AI system with him that would walk along with him, and she monitored all of his like health levels. So she would tell him like how, like what direction to turn, like this degrees to continue on his path, or how many calories he had to eat and whatnot. But eventually I think something happened to her body, so she was only ahead. So when you start the movie, he's just walking around looking for body parts for her, and he meets this girl, and that's the whole movie where she's trying to get to the ocean. And when they ask what the AI system name is, Susan, how long it'll take to get there, she says about 3 weeks. And then they ask if they'll make it, and she says no, and they decide to anyway. So it's kind of a weird balance of, or I guess a weird question of, does like artificial intelligence actually know anything, or are they just like repeating information and like the consciousness of it? And it's a really interesting it's a very interesting film. And I think it's still on Hulu. I think
it was like inspiring 2 weeks. I just looked it up and it says it's on Canopy too.
Oh, that's even better. You can use your public library access.
That's right.
To get on Canopy. But that's great. It's a great film. I would definitely recommend it.
It looks really cool. And I'd never heard of it. And I like the look based on the poster and just these stills that I've seen.
It's really lovely. And the pacing, I think, is even better because even like one of the best parts of it because since it's in the desert, there's a lot of just them walking. And even though it could be boring, it never feels boring. Hmm. Like, I don't know. I was engaged the entire time. And then, did you say you didn't have anything?
I have two things.
Talk about something else.
Okay. I saw a documentary called Let There Be Light. That was directed by John Huston and was one of the last movies that he made for the U.S. government during the war. But it's a documentary about veterans coming back from World War II with PTSD. But, you know, this was before they'd really diagnosed PTSD. So it's kind of this really strange documentary that's almost more just kind of like a fly on the wall type of thing where you watch all these guys being filmed and interviewed in like a kind of, it's not quite a mental institution, but it's not quite a rehab. It's like they don't have names for any of this stuff yet because it's, you know, the 40s. They're being interviewed by these doctors and seeing all these physical ailments, whether they're shaking or, you know, now they have a horrible stutter that they didn't used to have. And then slowly, as the documentary goes on, there's an occasional narrator that's actually Walter Huston, his father, who just kind of goes over some of the things that they're trying. And it you start to see the same people recurring. And as they delve into experiences in the war, some of their physical ailments start going away. But it was produced for the government. Well, that was Huston and a couple other directors. There's actually this this documentary series on Netflix that I watched a couple years ago that I'm going to hate myself for not being able to remember off the top of my head. Forgive me, my brain is very fried this week. But there's a bunch of directors that are really famous now that didn't get their start, but one of the things they did during like when they were drafted was they just made films. It's called Five Came Back, was this series. And John Huston was one of these directors that made films for the government, specifically the military, about the war. Specifically, some of them were like the effects of war or about specific battles. But this one was, I found really interesting. And it's actually, I watched it because it was one of the inspirations for The Master, which we talked about the other week. Paul Thomas Anderson's film, being, because that film is about Scientology in a very vague, veiled state. But then the other half of the film is Joaquin Phoenix's main character, who is this veteran returning from war, who has all of these strange, like this stutter and all of these things that he can't quite figure out. And that part of it was based on this documentary. So I watched it. It was good. I highly recommend it. It's kind of a hard watch at times, just because the stuff that these, knowing that it's real, some of the stuff that these people are going into of things they experience is kind of rough, but really fascinating. And it's only like an hour long, so it's a really quick watch too.
Wow. What's it called?
Let There Be Light.
What year is it from?
1946.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to do another one?
Sure. It's another thing that was on Hulu, but it's not expiring, I don't think. I watched it because of the cast. It's called Person to Person. It has, let me rattle them off. I watched it because of Michael Cera and Abby Jacobson. Ooh. But Benny Cooper Smith is in it, and I know him from his face. If you look up the poster for the movie, I know this is an audio podcast, but if you look up the poster for the movie, you'll see everybody that I know, everybody that's in it. And then there's some smaller characters that are newer to the screen that I really love their performance in it. Like, everybody in this movie has really amazing performances. And it premiered at Sundance in 2017. Hmm. And I'm mentioning it specifically because of the cinematography. I've been, because of my film specifically, I've been looking for more handheld centered shots and movies that focus on characters and conversations like that. And I looked at the cinematographer, and she is a very accomplished cinematographer that lives in New York. And I, from looking at her website and the things that she's done, I mean, just the other feature films I have, I've added on to my list. And then I also found out that she was the DP of the second unit for Knives Out, which I know you like.
I didn't even know that had a second unit.
I know, right? It's kind of crazy to learn about stuff like that. But it's a really cool movie. It's a really quick watch. I feel like a lot of the movies that we've been watching recently are like 2 hours or 2.5 hours.
It says it's only an hour 20.
Mm-hmm. And it feels not like, it feels long, but not in a bad way. And I know it's only like an hour and a half, but it covers so many different storylines, but they all take place in one day. And it's connecting these separate stories by like little threads. And it's really lovely and well written too.
Have you seen that Master of None episode? Have you seen Master of None at all?
No, I haven't.
There's an episode like that that follows a bunch of people's life in New York. And then they all interconnect throughout the day.
That's so cool.
I like stories like that. They're really hard to pull off. And I've seen like bad ones more than I've seen good ones.
Oh, really?
Every now and then. Yeah, you get like your crashes every now and then. But some of them are really cool. I think it's a really cool thing for TV too, especially if you have a TV show that has characters that aren't as connected. The only other film, and then you can do a couple more, I did was I watched a documentary called Magician, The Astonishing Life and Work of Orson Welles. Mm. I've been watching a lot of documentaries lately. I've been watching that McMillions documentary series on HBO about the McDonald's Monopoly scam.
Oh, wow.
That's actually pretty interesting. And I threw this one on because it's been on my Canopy list for a really long time. And I was bored and decided to watch it. And I've in the past said that Orson Welles is one of my favorite directors. Not necessarily like he's made, obviously, Citizen Kane, which is hailed by many to be like the greatest movie ever. But I'm more interested in him sometimes as a figure than some of the movies that he's made. More almost the movies that he could have made, just because his career and his personal life has such an interesting story in how he was kind of developed the sort of next stage of Hollywood with Citizen Kane and the types of movies he could make, but then forever was kind of abused and misused by the system. And then, you know, always 5 years after he tried to do something, you know, ended up changing things. Just in sort of how I hate using the word visionary because it gets appropriated to a lot of filmmakers I don't like. But I thought this is a really interesting documentary that kind of really dived deep into his career and his life and like what made him different and not just like, oh, look at all these great movies, because he really only has a couple amazing all-time great movies and then a career full of movies that were never finished or were taken over by a studio and finished in a way that he didn't want or lost forever. So I really, if you're interested in filmmaking like that, I think I recommended his movie that Netflix ended up finishing, Other Side of the Wind, on our decade list. And I found this to be like a nice companion piece. If you watched it like right before or right after, it would be pretty cool because you'd get a little more insight into what makes that movie so special that it finally got made. And, that it was a movie that he decided to make from the beginning, being that his career was so unstable, I should say. So I highly recommend that, Magician.
And that's on Canopy?
Yeah. I don't know that it's available anywhere else. I haven't looked. It looks like you can rent it and buy like a out-of-print DVD. So if you have another good reason to set up a Canopy subscription.
We gave you a couple, I think, there.
Yeah, that's right. But that's all the ones I have, so you can take it away.
I only have one more, and it's for a TV show, because really I haven't really had the time to watch many movies, but I have the time to watch some TV shows. And on Hulu, again, I found this show that's from Fox. It's called Bless the Hearts, and it has a really cool animated style, but the cast is also very cool. The lead is Kristen Wiig, and there Maya Rudolph is in it, Jillian Bell, and Kumail Nanjiani is in it also. He plays Jesus in it. And it's just a great, like, I've been really interested in animated shows recently. Like, I talked about American Dad last week, and how the concept has to be very strong, like, now I feel like nowadays, because animated shows can be any type of any type of way, so you really have to have solid characters and a solid like niche, I think, to really make an animated show stand out. And then also just the writing has to, like, TV show writing and comedy writing is so hard, I think, and you don't get a lot of time, because I feel like they always have to, like, push out episodes so many, like, there's like 20 episodes a season or something like that. And I mean, through us writing, like, films, I can't, like, that has to be such a different mindset to write TV shows versus films and short films and everything in between. But yeah, I would recommend that show.
Is there anything that really makes it stand out and makes it special to you?
I think the concept is something that hasn't been super explored. It focuses on a very, very poor family in the South, and, like, the kind of the quirks and nuances of Southern life. Like, the whole title is based on, like, the Bless Your Heart, like, kind of motto of the South. And it talks about all those issues, and in a fun way, and I don't know, I really love the family aspect of it too.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah, and another thing I'd never heard of, man, Hulu has those little hidden
titles. As you scroll through so many things, you'll find
stuff. I just give up now. I just go to my watch list, and honestly do, like, you're saying earlier, sort by what's leaving next, to be like, all right, what do I have to catch before it's gone? And then it's the debate, like, which one do I care the least about seeing and having it expire? But today's topic that we have, topic sounds so formal, idea we had for, like, a little mini-sode, was to talk about some movies that we love. We don't even have to love. We could just like them, too. Some of these I just kind of like that most people may not have seen, which is kind of part of our motto, is every film is foreign to somebody. The lights just blinked here, which is weird. So I've got a list that's probably too long. We probably won't get to most of these, so I'll probably play it by ear as to which ones I talk about. But did you want to get it started? I don't have anything besides one movie that was made 3 years ago. I don't have anything newer than 1992.
Oh, wow.
Most of my films are from, like, the 60s and the to 80s.
Oh, wow. I have a couple, but they're all from, like, not recent years, but, like, before the 2000s.
Okay. Well, perfect. It sounds like they balance each other out in a way. I don't think we'll have any duplicates. Did you want to start things off?
Sure, I can. One of the films I had on my list is, I think it's from 2015. It's the film Carol with Kate Blanchett and
Rooney Mara.
I mean, I've talked about this before. Like, when I was in high school, Tumblr was super popular, and this film, I feel like, went, like, I feel like that's where a lot of my film knowledge comes in, of just seeing stills of things on Tumblr. And Carol was one of the biggest ones. And just because I believe it's shot on 60mm.
Really?
And it's based on a book called The Price of Salt that was written by a queer author in, I think, the 70s. And I really love the history behind it. And the story itself is really beautiful. And mm-hmm. also, like, the color scheme. I actually did part of it for an aesthetics project and, yeah. like, looked at the color and
I see what it means. I see you're doing class
a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely movie. I think a lot of people, I mean, when I had talked about it in class, even Bainbridge, I hadn't known about it before.
Really?
Yeah. And
it was gonna say, I was curious what you felt made it underrated for you.
I just feel like when I had talked about it with people, nobody had known what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially because it's part of like queer cinema, it's not really like, I mean, it's not Love, Simon. Like, it's not something that's super marketable, I guess, to a wider audience.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it didn't have the, I guess, I don't want to say commercial release, but.
I get what you're going at there. Yeah.
I think it didn't get as much as it deserved. And it's a really lovely film.
Nice. That's a good start. My first one, I think I'll jump to, is Phantom of the Paradise from 1974. Directed by Brian De Palma, who has slowly become one of my favorite directors. And I think this movie is just so fascinating for so many different reasons. It's kind of a play on the Faust story, and they directly reference Faust. Because I think when the main character is trying to make a musical version of the I don't remember if Faust is a tragedy or a play, like whatever specific designation it is, but about you know, the selling your soul story, mm-hmm. basically. And this is like a different, it's like a Inception in that it's a that sort that story within a different story, but it's about this music composer who sells his soul to really for the like this woman that he meets, but also to have the fame that he thought he'd never have because he felt he was not marketable. His music is beautiful, but he's not. Well, then he becomes even more disfigured and sort of turns into this sort of phantom of the opera. But he's the sort of secret behind this big club that's being opened by this musical tycoon named Swan, who's played by Paul Williams. Who did all the Muppets music.
Oh, wow.
And he actually does all the music for this film and plays the villain in it, which is so fascinating because the villain he's playing is, he's basically the devil from the analogy with Faust, but, and it's got these like crazy musical sequences, but it's also this sort of very sad tragedy, but then there's some sequences that are kind of like a horror film in a lot of ways. It's really a grab bag of things, and some of the music, even though it's so specific to the story, it's not just like they're playing like catchy songs. Mm-hmm. It's like the story is being told through the music, much like a ballad. But there's a couple of the songs that are, you know, you hum them even once the movie's over. And it's another one that I don't feel anyone is, or a lot of people haven't heard of. And especially for De Palma, it's like very out of character for him. I mean, he makes all of these, like you talked about how much you love Blowout. Like mm-hmm. he makes movies I would consider in that vein, like Sisters. Dress to Kill. You know, mm-hmm. these sort of like creepy, suspenseful, almost Hitchcockian films. And this one is just, it's got some of that, but it's also just zany and wacky and fun. Mm-hmm. So I highly recommend that one.
I'll definitely check it out because, like you said, I love Brian De Palma and his films. But that's interesting that it's not something that he usually does.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Kind of out of step for him. Not in a bad way. do you have another?
Yes. What am I going to talk about next? Okay. I'll talk about one of the films I also love. It's called Palo Alto. It's based on a series of short stories written by James Franco based on his life, because that's where him and his brother, or his family, are from. They're from Palo Alto, California. Really? And it was written and directed by Gia Coppola. And it's, I really enjoy films that are kind of, I hesitate to say like slice of life, but usually it takes place like over the course of an evening, and it just focuses on a simple, like, just like night out and people just getting to know each other, or there's conflict between them and they have to figure it out before the sun comes up or something like that. Like American Graffiti.
Oh, okay.
That type of, it's a little more obviously modernized, but I would, it's more, I guess, I don't want to say raunchy. That's not the right word. But it's,
maybe adult.
I don't want to say that, because the way that it's described on Google is, a lack of parental guidance encourages teens in an affluent California town to rebel with substance abuse and casual sex. And it's really just like about these four kids just trying to figure out each other and figure out growing up when their parents aren't like super down their necks or anything like that. And mm-hmm. And it has Nat Wolff in it, and Emma Roberts, and Zoe Levin, and also introducing, or I mean, it was 2013, it was introducing then Jack Kilmer, who I think
sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think he's been in a couple of things. I hope he's been in a couple of things since then. But I also want to mention it because I love the soundtrack a lot. It's done by Robert Schwartzman, and I watched this movie like when I first started college, and I've since always really just listened to that soundtrack when I've been studying, so it's kind of always been in my ear. And I don't know, this movie, I think a lot of people, like I've been saying, don't talk about too much, and I think it is a great view of what I like to think of like my high school days to be, and not in like a romanticized way, but in like a natural, like, this is, you see every part of us way. I don't know, I like it.
That's cool. I'll take things in a minor, some of mine are slowly gonna get darker. But this is a suspense movie that, or mystery thriller as it's classified, from 1966. that I found, I think a year or two ago, called Bunny Lake Is Missing.
Oh, wow.
I found it because its star, one of the two stars, is Keir Douay, who plays Dave in 2001 A Space Odyssey. And he came to AFI a few years ago and did a Q&A for 2001 A Space Odyssey. But he also, they screened Bunny Lake Is Missing, and he did a Q&A for that. And that was earlier in the afternoon, and I couldn't go to that. But I'd never heard of that movie, and I was like, wow, it must be a pretty famous movie for him to do, like, a Q&A. Mm-hmm. And then I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, no one's – I've never heard of that, and it appears no one's ever seen this movie. And then it popped up on a streaming service about a year ago, and I watched it. And I'm surprised no one's seen it, because it's really good. It's also directed by Otto Preminger, who did, like, Anatomy of a Murder, so, like, very established – director, especially for this genre. Like, it feels very much in step and tone with him. But it's about this young woman who recently moved to this new place in England. I don't, she might have, the wife at least might have not been from England at all. I don't think the whole any of the family is from England, so it's, you know, unknown surroundings. And then she enrolls her daughter in this school for her first day of school, and then she goes to pick her up and she's not there, and then slowly there's like no record of her ever existing. Like, she goes home and none of her daughter's stuff is there, and all of this stuff, like, she's totally missing. And then it's just this, it's part mystery where she's trying to find out what happened to her daughter, and then part this sort of like vaguely psychological movie where you're trying to figure out, oh, you know, did she ever really exist? Is this woman just crazy? And really fantastic direction and performances. Carol Lindley plays Anne Lake. And then Laurence Olivier plays like the investigator of the case. Juan Tovey was like a really famous actor, especially in like silent movies, and this is like a really great performance of him in a movie sort of beyond his initial career. And it's just fascinating and has like really great twists and turns. Cinematography is beautiful, black and white cinematography. The DP, can't remember his name, but he was like a camera operator on The Third Man. So clearly understands his deep focus, black and white cinematography. And I just really, it feels in step with like a Psycho or one of those like 60s thriller mystery movies. And I'm really, really surprised that no one's ever heard of this movie when I bring it up.
What's it called?
Bunny Lake is Missing.
Bunny Lake is Missing.
It's like an absolute must watch for me. Highly, highly recommend it.
It's a great recommendation. I don't really have too many other ones to talk about. It's a movie that came out kind of recently. It also has Emma Roberts in it.
Ooh.
Called Nerve.
Have you heard of that? I've seen that.
How did you feel about it?
I liked a great deal of it until I started not liking it. Yeah. I don't really like the ending.
Really?
Yeah.
I can see that. I understand that.
I mean, I don't want to talk about the plot vaguely because I'm sure a lot of people haven't seen it. I do agree it's underrated and it's really well put together. The last act for me feels like they just kind of either ran out of money or ideas and they're trying to do something bigger than they can really execute. But the concept is so fascinating. Do you want to explain it for those who may not be familiar? And like, it's such a good like log line. Like you can really sell this.
Mm-hmm. I think, the log line is, the concept is there's a game that you can play on your phone where you can either choose if you're the player or watcher, I believe.
Yeah.
And if you're the player, then people will send you dares that you have to do with a time limit and you get money for the dares that you do if they're more risky or not.
Mm.
And if you have to keep accepting the dares, you can't stop or you lose all of the money that you've gotten before. But it's a really, like, I remember it being like gripping me so much. Like it was so like anxiety. Like,
yeah.
I'm super once it gets in
going,
it. Yeah.
It's pretty much continuous and it gets pretty, pretty crazy.
Yeah. And I think I agree with you about, like, I feel like it gets to such a height that like there's nowhere to go after that.
Totally
so
agree.
I don't know what you could do after that. So I guess I kind of understand why the ending happened like that. But I don't know. I feel like I have such strong feelings about that movie and I haven't heard really anything after it. And I feel like it could have been, I feel like it goes within the genre of like the Hunger Games, Maze Runner, like young adult kind of focused narrative that could have had a bigger following and I think didn't. And it surprises me also because of the cast. Because it's like Emma Roberts and I think one of the Franco brothers is in it. Like I think the other Franco brother is in it.
Dave.
Yeah.
Dave Franco. Co-star.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it just kind of popping up. I saw a lot of like, and it makes sense, a lot of like YouTube advertisements for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, I don't even know why, because it's not the type of movie that I'm really drawn to. But it felt like, and I guess Black Mirror would have been going, and there is a Black Mirror episode, I guess, that's kind of like this.
Yeah.
But it felt like a Black Mirror episode kind of before any of that. And I don't know, I think it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me a lot. There's this movie that came out about maybe a couple years earlier called Cheap Thrills. It's about and I think it does this concept better because it's not as sort of obsessed with the more science fiction-y. And again, Nerve is not science fiction, but the tech stuff is definitely
a
focus. It's
described as a techno thriller.
But Cheap Thrills is about this guy who runs into this old friend at a bar and he's got, you know, this new wife and then they're hanging out, having a good time. They're catching up. They haven't seen each other in forever. And then they start doing like dares, and he, like the guy that he runs into and his wife start like daring him to do crazier and crazier things. Then they rope this other guy into it, and it starts off really simple and kind of harmless of just like, oh, I'll give you $20 if you, you know, like spill that guy's drink. But then it goes to some really insanely dark places at the end where like they're just like, it's clear they're like getting high off of these, like the betting side of this, like will he do it, will he won't, kind of, it's Nerve without the phones. Like it's way more smaller, isolated, and I think it sticks the landing, this one. So if you were kind of like, ooh, this was cool but not totally there, Cheap Thrills is definitely not as accessible as Nerve. Nerve is this kind of like fun you could put on and have a good time, and it's pretty low risk. Where Cheap Thrills is pretty intense and gets pretty heavy at some points, but I think is also underrated and totally nails whatever it's going for.
That's so interesting. And I was looking at the like box office and the budget for each of the films, and Cheap Thrills barely only made like half of it, and Nerve went so much further over. But like this type of film, I guess the like there's so many, I guess dare game, like I can't remember what the title is,
came out a couple years ago.
Yeah, probably. But I like it can go to such a height that it like it goes past the sense of like believability.
Yeah,
and it sounds like this film doesn't go that way, that it keeps it believable.
Small.
That's good.
Yeah, it is one of those, like when you're writing a story, one of the like the hardest questions, other than like, well, is why is it happening now? Mm-hmm. And then with a movie like this, it's sort of the inverse of why is this happening? Like, why would they not just say no? Why would they not stop? And when it comes to stuff like money or embarrassment, it's easy to have like a film that you can be like, oh, I get that, like sure, but it's hard to have one that like you're absolutely there, like, oh, I also would not be able to say no, whether it's so enticing or the situation you're in is just so messed up that your life is over if you say no and drop out. Where I feel like Nerve sometimes also struggles with the stakes, where it's like, oh man, if they don't get all that digital money, they're exactly where they are when the night started. And maybe now they've got a friendship, but...
That's true. Yeah. The stakes are different.
I recommend Nerve, though. Absolutely. Not to discredit that. I think Nerve and Cheap Thrills would actually make a really cool double feature. Mm. I would be curious to try that one out. I could do one or two more, depending. I don't know if you've scrounged up another one. Or we could just end it early. Oh, gosh, it's really hard.
It's
I want to do a newer movie, but I'm kind of tempted to go really off again. I'll go Leap of Faith, which is a Steve Martin comedy question mark. I say comedy because I watched it the first time thinking it was going to be like a Steve Martin comedy, but it's actually a lot deeper and a lot more serious than I thought it would be, but it is still very funny. It's about like a traveling preacher who, like one of those old sort of town to town, set up a tent, have like a quote unquote revival meeting, and you find out really early on he's faking it. None of his like miracles, or it's all like a show to him. But then he goes to this one town. He's a con artist, basically. He goes to this one town where he kind of, I think they break down in the town, actually. So it's not even like a town they were supposed to be in. He kind of starts to fall in love with the town. He makes connections there, but then there's, like a sheriff who's like set on exposing him as a fraud, but then some like weird stuff starts happening too that starts to make him question his life choices, but also like in good and bad ways of like what he's gotten himself into, and like how like weird situations can like both hurt and benefit people. And it's just really hard to nail down movie, which is definitely why it was not successful and no one's heard of it. because I'll bet everyone who went expecting a comedy was really disappointed because it's funny, but it's not trying, like, it's not a comedy, really. It is very much a drama, too, and a bit of a romance as well. Actually, looking at the IMDb right now, it literally says comedy, drama, romance. So it's trying to do a little too many things at times. And this is another one where I don't know if it totally sticks the landing and gets a little wacky, but it's fun to see Steve Martin ride this really weird, like, comedic serious line where it's almost like he is playing, where usually he plays like a character in a comedy that's just like a very outlandish, kind of Steve Carell's, style. It might be more accessible. But in this one, he's like almost playing someone who's doing that shtick where he's kind of trying to be larger than life and fool people and be this wacky go-getter guy all the time. But then there's different sides to it as well that you see. So he has like a surprising amount of range. I don't know. It's fun. It's kind of sweet too towards the end. It's weird. But if you're looking for something that you're kind of like, huh, what was that? I recommend Leap of Faith.
That's cool.
1992, which was also a really weird time for, like, Steve Martin.
Your recommendation goes exactly with the title. Like, if you're looking for something, take a
Leap of Faith. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Could have been a good pun there. Well, that's a good list. That's my watch list has grown by, what, four movies? Five movies?
Yeah.
How many? Listed.
Yeah, I really want to watch the Bunny Lake is Missing.
Yeah, I think you'd really like that based on some of the other movies I know you like.
I have something that has been interesting to me lately. This isn't necessarily movies that are underrated, but more movies that I've started that I stopped 30 minutes in.
Yeah.
And recently, it's been the movie Airheads. Which has Steve Buscemi in it and Adam Sandler. And I watched it because of Adam Sandler and Brendan Fraser, excuse me. But I want to watch it. Like, I want to like
it. Yeah.
But I just wasn't, I didn't believe it after a certain point. Like, I don't know. They hijack the radio station and then they're just in there, but it just continues for so long, I feel like. And I don't know. Like I said, I want to like it because it has lovely people in it, but it wasn't doing it for me. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. I've heard of it. And that's a funny phenomenon that I'm like very adamant of, like, I start something and I finish it, and like I've never walked out of a movie in like a theater.
I don't think I could walk out of one.
Yeah, that's like an extra step, I feel. But there are some of these movies that have just like eluded me in that. Like Whiskey Tango Foxtrot is one that comes to mind that I mentioned a couple of times. That Tina Fey movie where she's like a war journalist. Because I went in kind of like Leap of Faith. Except Leap of Faith worked for me. I went expecting a comedy, and it's very much not a comedy, but not totally not a comedy either. It's writing this weird line that I didn't really like. So I was like, this isn't really what I'm looking for right now, and I turned it off and put on something else that was what I was looking for, and I've never gone back and finished it. And I do that more with TV just because of time, because I don't budget my time for TV the same way. But there are some of these movies that are floating out that I've seen, like, 45 minutes of, and that's it. Where I get like 10 minutes in and fall asleep, like I had with the Parallax View for a couple weeks in previous episodes.
I think, I don't know if it's more telling if I keep going back to a movie after I've like maybe like turned it off, not turned it off, or like fallen asleep with it, or just like been interrupted, like Mother, for example. Like I had to keep going back and watching it, and I'd be interested to know why some movies end up affecting you like that,
where
like some grip you, like obviously
what gets in your brain.
What's the psychology behind it?
I'm curious to hear other people's movies
that they've started,
the elusive films. What's something that you've started that you just can't seem to finish? And it could be for a bunch of different reasons, too, which I think makes it more interesting sometimes than the movie.
That's very true.
Because people could say something like, 2001 A Space Odyssey, because it's boring, you know. But I don't know. There's some of those movies that, like, you just can't quite put your finger on it.
And, just don't grab you.
I like the story behind it. That was good. I like that little mini-sode. Mm-hmm. Good format, especially since our brains are so fried. Apologies for the frazzled nature of this episode, but just a fun little chat. And again, hopefully turns into something interactive too. We'd love to hear any maybe underrated movies.
Of course.
You could comment on one of our social media posts about this episode.
Mm-hmm. Tweet at us.
You can find
at Only Foreign Films.
Perfect. We'd love to hear, like you said, the stories are so interesting. I'd love to hear a little tease of what our listeners think and are also experiencing that are different from ourselves, because I love how different our lists are.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked this concept going in, knowing that we probably wouldn't be talking about the same movies and maybe wouldn't be talking. I think there's only one movie that one of us had seen before.
That the other had.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll do another version of this sometime, but we'll probably do a couple more of these mini just us episodes sprinkled throughout our regular guest episodes as the semester gets even crazier.
Mm-hmm. But we do have some exciting guests coming up.
We do, yes.
Very excited about
that. Which we could talk about. And we could, but we'd like to keep it a surprise. Mm-hmm. Yes. So until next week, that's us.
Yeah, you can get off.